Okay, this is lesson number 10. The era is the conquest. Our book is Joshua. All right, start off with a review of the eight eras. What's number one?
Creation.
Read nice and loud.
Creation.
Number two?
Patriarch.
Number three?
Exodus.
Four?
Conquest.
There we go. We're talking about the conquest. We're on era number four. It's the conquest. Let's go to our dry erase board. Patriarchs. Exodus. Conquest. All right, main character in creation is?
Adam.
Very good. Main character in patriarchs is?
Abraham.
Very good. Main character in Exodus is?
Moses.
Our new main character is?
Joshua.
Very good. Make sure that you can walk the dog down like that. Make sure that you can do that. This book is Genesis. This book is Genesis. This book is?
Exodus.
This book is?
Joshua.
Very good. Make sure that you understand that. Creation is found in the first 11 chapters of Genesis. Patriarchs is found in chapters 12 through 50 in Genesis. Exodus is found in the book of Exodus. And now we're transitioning to the conquest of the what?
The promised land.
The land was originally promised to?
Abraham.
God gave or established a covenant with Abraham, and that covenant gave him three things, and one of the three was
land.
A chunk of
land.
All right, this land is known as the Promised Land. What are the two bodies of water inside the Promised Land?
Sea of Galilee.
All right, Matt says the Sea of Galilee.
And the Red Sea.
And the Dead Sea.
And
the Dead Sea. Very good. The Dead Sea and the Sea of Galilee. Matt, what is the body of water that connects the two?
Jordan River.
The Jordan River. Very good. The Jordan River. Okay? So we are now going to conquer the land. We're going to conquer the land. Let's go to my incredible drawing skills here. This is the Mediterranean Sea. Mediterranean Sea, right? This is Egypt. The body of water that we had to cross to get over there was the Red Sea. Now we're in this chunk of land right here, which is where we think Mount Sinai is. This is south of the Promised Land. We are going to go up like this and into the Promised Land. That is our route. We're on the outside side, or what would be the eastern side. We're going to move north, and then we're going to cross the Jordan River, and we're going to go into the Promised Land. Okay. Deuteronomy chapter number 34, please. Take your Bibles and turn to Deuteronomy chapter 34. I want to show you the transition between Exodus and Moses to conquest and judges. Deuteronomy 34. Deuteronomy 34. All right. I need a reader and I need it to be loud. All right, go Heather, nice and loud. Start with verse 1.
Okay. And Moses went up from the plains of Moab up to the mountain of Nebo to the top of Pisgah that is over against Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead unto Dan, and all Naphtali, and the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, and all the land of Judah unto the uttermost sea. In the south, in the plain of the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees unto Zoar. And the Lord said unto him, this is the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, saying, I will give it unto thy seed. I have caused thee to see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not go over thither. So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. And he buried him in a valley in the land of Moab, over against Beth Peor, but no man knoweth of his sepulchre unto this day. And Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. And the children of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. So the days of weeping and mourning for Moses were ended. And Joshua the son of Nun was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands upon him. And the children of Israel hearkened unto him, and did as the Lord commanded Moses. And there arose not a prophet since in Israel like unto Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. And all the signs and the wonders which the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt to Pharaoh, and to all his servants, and to all his land, and all that mighty hand, and all the great terror which Moses showed in the sight of all Israel.
All right, so there's the transition. Let's take our maps that I just gave you, please. Take your maps that I just gave you. Let's go ahead and take a look at this. Find the Jordan River, please, on your map. Find Jericho on your map. Okay, now you're beginning to see. Look very closely where it says Gad. Look very closely where it says Reuben. We are looking at a map in the ESV Study Bible that we've reproduced for you. I want you to notice the Jordan River right there and then the city of Jericho. We presently are on the west, the east side of the river. We're looking over. And did you notice the names? I wanted you to pay attention, first of all, to Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, what you should recognize about Ephraim and Manasseh is they are not children of Israel. They are not children of Israel. Who are they children of then if they're not children of Israel?
They're Joseph's.
They're Joseph's sons. That's correct. Those are Joseph's sons. So the land that Joseph would have received as one of the 12 patriarchs has been divided with his grandsons instead. So Manasseh and Ephraim are Joseph's sons. All right, let's go to our dry erase board. All right, Andrew, let's back this up and let's remember this. Andrew has Abraham and Sarah have a son. That son is?
Isaac.
Very good. Their son is Isaac. All right. Isaac has a son, has twins. Who are they?
Jacob and Esau.
Jacob and Esau. We're going to say Esau and Jacob because Esau was the firstborn, lost his birthright. It all went to
Jacob.
Jacob wrestled with God and got a new name, and that name was?
Israel.
Very good. Israel. Israel has four wives and 12
sons.
Four wives and 12 sons. The two primary wives are, in the order in which you received them?
Leah and Rachel.
Okay, Leah and Rachel. The better looking of the two was?
Rachel.
All right. Okay. Very good. So now we're going to go down here, Andrew, to 12 sons. The last of the two sons were whom?
Joseph and Benjamin.
Joseph and Benjamin. Would you look on your map, please? Look at your map. Do you see a place where Benjamin receives a plot of land?
Yes.
You see it right there? And Judah and Simeon and Reuben and Gad and Zebulun and Issachar and Naphtali and Asher. These are the 12 tribes of
Israel.
The 12 tribes of Israel. And you'll notice Joseph's name is?
Not there.
It's missing. There is no land that says Joseph. That's because God gave Joseph's two sons. Sons born where?
In Egypt.
Those are the two sons. Each got a parcel of land. Each got a section of land. By the way, do you notice how much Manasseh got?
A lot.
A huge. It's a tremendous portion on the west and the east side of the Jordan River. Now notice you should be looking for a son that is missing. There is a son of Israel that is missing. Who can identify the son of Israel that is missing? A son of Israel that is missing. Starts with the letter L. Anyone? Is Levite. Levi. No land for him. Why not? Why do they not have their own section of land? Nope. Why don't they have their own section of land? Why don't they have it? He's one of the 12.
They're the priests.
They're the priests. Exactly, Matt. They're the priests. And the priests stay with the what?
The
tabernacle. The priests stay with the tabernacle. So they don't have their own land. So, Andrew, how many sons does Jacob have? 12, that's right. Minus the Levites takes us down to?
11.
Minus Joseph takes us down to?
10.
Add the two grandsons back in, or the sons of Joseph, and we're back up to?
12.
We're back up to 12. You must understand how we got there. That's going to be an essay. 12 sons of Israel. Minus Levi, because Levi doesn't get a piece of land, because what do? They take care of the what? The tabernacle. Joseph doesn't get a piece of land because God gives it to his two sons. And so now that gives us back up to 12. 12 minus 1 is 11. 11 minus 1 is 10. 10 plus 2 is 12. Make sure you know that this first one is Levi. The second one is Joseph. And these two are who?
Joseph's sons.
Manasseh and Ephraim. Notice in verse number 4 that he swore unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob the land that he would give him. Those are our son, grandson, or Abraham the father, the son, and the grandson. All right, let's transition now to chapter number 1, verse number 1 of Joshua. Matt, could you read that, please, and nice and loud?
After the death of Moses and the servant of the Lord came to pass, the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses, minister, saying, Moses, my servant is dead. Now therefore arise over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that sole your foot shall tread upon, that I have given unto you, as I said unto Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. There shall not be any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so will I be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. Be strong and of good courage. Unto this people thou shalt divide for an inheritance of the land, which I swear unto the fathers to give them. Be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law, which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn it not from thee the right hand to the left, thou mayest prosper with it, whithersoever thou goest. This is the book of the law, shall not depart out of thy mouth. But thou shalt meditate therein day and night, and thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and thou shalt have good success. Have I not commanded thee? Be strong and of good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed. For the Lord thy God is with thee, whithersoever thou goest. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, Pass through the host, command the people, saying, Prepare you victuals, for within thee 3 days thou shalt pass over this Jordan, until you go into the land possessed, to which the Lord God giveth you to possess it.
All right, very good. Okay, so that's the transition. We have moved now from Moses to... Moses is now dead. He stays on the other side. He does not get to go into the promised land. That is God's punishment for Moses' anger and his sin. And so he doesn't get to occupy the land. Joshua now leads them. And the first step is we've got to get from the other side to... we've got to get from the east side of the Jordan to the west side of the Jordan. And we're going to do that in how many days? It says it right there in the text. In 3 days. So Joshua gives a warning order to the people of God to get ready to cross over the land. So let me give you our four main events. They're in your textbook, but you need to write these down. Four main events. Number one, crossing the Jordan into the land. Number one, crossing the Jordan into the land. Number two, make sure you're writing these down. Defeat of Jericho. Defeat of Jericho. That's the leading city that has to be conquered. That's the walled city. That's the number one city that has to be taken down. Once we take down Jericho, number three is conquest. That's the defeat of the Canaanites. Number four is the dominion. The dominion. That's where we finalize the conquest. So, four major steps. And we're gonna do this through the book of Joshua. All right, here's our main idea. Please write this down. God uses Israel to punish the idolaters in the land. God uses Israel to punish the idolaters in the land. What is an idolater? Someone who worships a false god. That's right. Someone who worships a false god. An idolater is someone who worships a false god. So God uses Israel, that's the nation, not the person now, because Jacob is long dead. God uses the nation of Israel to punish idolaters. What is their punishment? What is their punishment? What? Death. Death. Capital punishment. Capital punishment. Death. They are to be killed. Israel is going to go in there and kill the idolaters. And then, and this is the next point, and God fulfills his promise to who?
Abraham.
Abraham. And God fulfills his promise to who?
Abraham.
Abraham. God fulfills his promise to Abraham. So the first thing that has to be done is a transition from Moses to Joshua. Now the people know that God is now with Joshua. The next thing that happens are spies are sent out to determine how best to take the land. Now do not get confused. This is not the spies that go out in the 12 and then two come back and there's a bad report and a good. That's not this set. When did that happen?
Carnage by the end.
When Moses was alive, this was 40 plus years ago, Matt, because they had to wander in the wilderness for 40 years as a punishment for their failure to believe that God would give them the
promised land.
The promised land. This crossing over to do the spy work is to see how to take down the city of Jericho. It's a different. This is different. So the sending out spies happens twice. The first time, Joshua is one of the spies, George. This time, he's the leader sending out others. That's the difference. Now, there is a female that's an incredible character in this story. Who is it? No.
Rahab.
Rahab the harlot. Rahab the harlot. Rahab the harlot. Okay? Rahab the harlot. She protects the spies. She protects the spies. She's the one that protects the spies. They know that the children, they being the enemy, know that the children of Israel on the other side of the Jordan River. Look at your map. Look how close Jericho is to the Jordan River. If you had a people as large as 2 million on the other side of the Jericho River, the Jordan River, you would know that somebody's there. They know that they're getting ready to have a war. They are nervous. They know that a warring force will always send out spies. The spies are sent out and are discovered, and Rahab the harlot protects the two. In exchange for their protection, they give her a promise. What is the promise? All right, let's do one person. Matt, what is it?
Thread out the window.
Right, a red rope or thread or something out the window. And when they see that, are they to destroy that house?
No.
They're going to protect the house and they're going to protect the occupants of that house. What is that scarlet letter a picture of? That's right. It's a picture of God's salvation. It's a picture of God's salvation. God shed his blood. It's not an accident that it's the color red. It's not an accident that it's the color scarlet. It's not an accident that a sinner gets saved. More than a sinner. What else is Rahab besides just being a sinner? Okay, besides being a harlot. There's more to it than just that. Is Rahab a Jew? She is a
Gentile.
She's a Gentile. What is this a picture of? Gentiles getting saved, Matt. This is a picture of Gentiles getting saved. This goes beyond that. Make sure that you write down about the scarlet thread. Make sure that you write down that this is a picture of salvation. Make sure that you write down the fact that Rahab is a Gentile. That's going to be a great essay question. The Jordan River is another test of faith. Once again, the children of Israel have to cross a body of water. This is the second time that they've crossed a body of water. This is the second time that God has stopped water for them. He does the same thing with the Jordan River that he did for the Red Sea. Moses, the leader, crosses a body of water and God shows that he's with them by stopping the water. Now the new leader is Joshua, and God does the same miraculous work for Joshua. The moment they put their toe into the water or their foot into the water, it immediately stops up the water, and 2 million Israelites cross over the Jordan River on dry ground. Why did God do that? To remind Israel, I'm still with you. This is still your land. I'm going to fulfill my promise to you. I'm going to fulfill my promise to you. Turn over to Joshua chapter number 4. And it came to pass that when all the people were clean passed over the Jordan, and that the Lord spake unto Joshua, saying, take you 12 men out of the people, out of every tribe of man, command you them, saying, take you hence in the middle of the Jordan, out of the place where this priest stood firm, 12 stones, and you carry them over with you, and leave them in the lodging place where you shall lodge this night. So this is what the instructions were. Now just picture this in your mind today. You see the Jordan River on your map. The people were to cross over. The Levites were to carry. What were they carrying? Help me. What were they carrying? They were carrying before the stones. What were they carrying? The Ark of the
Covenant.
The Ark of the Covenant and all the tabernacle stuff. What the priests did is they stood, Felix, in the middle of the river bed, and they waited until everyone passed by. The Ark of the Covenant. What's inside the Ark of the Covenant? The commandments, the law. The law is inside the Ark of the Covenant. And they stand firm holding the Ark of the Covenant. Can anyone else touch the Ark of the Covenant?
No.
Okay? Death if you touch the Ark of the Covenant. Only the Levites can. The rest of the Israelites march by. Thousands and thousands of them. Women, children, dogs, cats. Every sheep, everyone crossing over. And then they're all on the other side. And Joshua, the leader, says from a man from each tribe, Ken representing one tribe, George representing another tribe, Felix representing another tribe, Matt representing another tribe, all the tribal leaders are to go and get two large stones. One stone is to be carried back into the Jordan River and piled. The other stone is to be kept where they spent the first night on the other side. So two large piles of stones, one on the dry ground there, one in the riverbed. What was the purpose of the stones? They were memorial stones. What is a memorial stone? What does that mean when we have a memorial stone? You go to Washington, D.C. and there's a memorial there. What is a memorial stone?
It's set to honor something.
It's set to honor something, more than that.
Memory.
It's a memory, right. It's a memory. Let's continue reading in the Bible. And Joshua called the 12 men in whom he had prepared the children of Israel out of every tribe. And Joshua said unto them, pass over before the ark of the Lord your God unto the middle of the Jordan, and take you every man a stone upon his shoulder, according unto the number of the tribes of the children. Listen to this wording. That this may be a sign among you, that when your children ask their fathers in the time to come, saying, what mean you by these stones? So 10 years later, 15 years later, 30 years later, 50 years later, 100 years later, and when somebody's passing by and a little boy says, Daddy, what's the deal with these stones? Why is there a perfect pile of 12 stones right here? What's the father supposed to do?
Tell him what happened.
Son, let me tell you about a time in which God miraculously stopped the Jordan River and 2 million Israelites walked across the Jordan River. Event number two is the defeat of Jericho. Turn in your Bible to Joshua chapter number 5. Look at verse number 13. Ashley, can you read 13, please, through the end of 15? Nice and loud.
And it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went unto him and said unto him, art thou for us or for our adversaries? And he said, nay, but as captain of the host of the Lord am I now come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and did worship and said unto him, what saith my Lord unto his servant? And the captain of the Lord's host said unto Joshua, loose thy shoe from off thy foot, for the place whereon thou standest is holy. And Joshua did so.
All right, this is either one of two events. Either Joshua has met the pre-incarnate Jesus Christ, pre-incarnate. What do we mean by pre-incarnate, George?
Before he was born.
Right, before he was born. That's pre-incarnate. So either Joshua has met the pre-incarnate Christ, or number two is he's met the angel Michael, the archangel Michael. One of those two. The archangel Michael, Felix, is the angel in heaven that God has assigned responsibility to protect Israel. So either when he says here, and it came to pass when Joshua was at Jericho, lifted up his eyes and looked, and he saw there stood a man over against him with a sword drawn in his hand. Now, what do you know about Jesus coming again? Will he have a sword?
Yeah.
Yes.
Out of his mouth will be a two-edged sword.
So I think that he met Jesus. That's what I think. This is a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus. And look what Joshua says. Now, Joshua's a bold dude. He says, hey, are you for us or against us? You on my side or are you against? Do I need to kill you right now or are you on our side? And he says, nay, neither. What does he mean by neither?
He's not on either side.
He's not on either side. Why is he not on either side? Why does it need to be on a side? If he was on a side, it would imply that he's subordinate to Joshua. So I'm not on either side. I am the captain of what?
The host of the Lord.
That's why I think it is a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ. He says, I'm in charge of the host of the Lord. Now, what do you think that did for Joshua? What did that do for Joshua?
Made him humble.
What else did it do? What do you think it would do to his faith? What do you think it would do to Joshua's faith? What, George?
Strengthen it.
It would strengthen it, of course. Why does Joshua need his faith strengthened right now?
Yeah,
he's about ready to take down Jericho. Man, I need to know. I'm going up against giants. Chapter number 6, Joshua meets Jesus or an angel of the Lord. The historicity of Jericho is beyond question. What do I mean by the historicity of Jericho is beyond question? When I use that expression, historicity, what do I mean by that?
There's clear stuff that...
There's clear evidence that there was a Jericho. This is not a fairy tale. There's plenty of evidence that there was a Jericho. Why such a bizarre way of conquering Jericho? I mean, what happened? What did they have to do?
March around the city all day.
All day? Is that how it went?
One time a day.
Ken, tell us.
Well,
you remember?
A little.
All right, Matt, do you remember well? All right, tell us.
They marched around it one time the first day, one time the second day, until the seventh day, and they marched around it 7 times, and then it fell.
Okay, now that's bizarre. Could just imagine some weird idea that I come up with that we as a sophomore class are going to take down the mall. And once a day we get up and we're going to walk over to the mall, and we're going to walk around the mall one time, then we're going to come back. Then we're going to get up the next day and we're going to walk around the mall one time and come back. And then on the third day and the fourth day, and then I tell you on the seventh day, we're going to walk around the mall this number of times. At the end, we're going to blow our trumpets. Now, what would you think? That I'd lost my what?
My
marbles, yes. Looney Tunes. What do you think the people in Jericho thought?
What are these people doing?
What do you think, George? What do you think the people inside the walled city of Jericho thought? They march around one time, they go hang out. Go back to playing cards, canasta, chess. Get up the next morning, do it again. Get up the next morning, do it again. I mean, they're wondering. The people inside the city are wondering. Joshua's wondering. All right. Answer this question for me, sophomores. Why did God do it in that way? All right, to test their faith, but why else? There's more to it than just that.
Show how he isn't just some awesome miracle type thing to...
All right, what else?
That he
can take down the walls.
That he can take down the walls. George, why is it important that God shows them that he's the one that takes down the walls?
So they would have faith in him when they went to go fight the other battles.
All right, that they would have faith in him, sure. Who gets all the glory in this bizarre method of taking down the city?
God.
Who gets all the glory?
God.
God does. Gets all the glory. God gets all the glory. That's not even shared. I mean, what did you do? Well, Lord, I walked around. That's it. Who defeated the city? God did. There's no doubt. God did. Now, just think about how that must have spread throughout the land. Can you just imagine The largest city in the land is Jericho. The most walled city is Jericho. The Israelites take down that city first, and the way they take it down is by blowing trumpets. What do you think the rest of the inhabitants of the land thought? It must have been incredible trumpets. I mean, just unbelievable trumpets. God gets all the glory in this. Let's look at Joshua chapter number 6, verse 21. Joshua 6, verse 21. Look at the commandment that is given. Verse 20 says, "So the people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets, and it came to pass when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and women, young and old, axe, sheep, donkey, with the edge of the sword." What kind of fear would have spread throughout the land, George, when something like that happened? What kind of paranoia?
A lot?
What do you think? Mr. Usher, what do you think? What kind of fear would have spread through the land when the walled cities come down and everyone that has a pulse is killed?
Crippling.
What?
Crippling fear.
Crippling fear. Because in the past, when an army conquered the other one, they didn't kill them. What did they do?
They
would enslave them. They would take the beautiful women and make their own. They would take the able-bodied and make them their own. The only ones that were killed oftentimes were the handicapped, the ones that weren't. But if you were an able-bodied person, you were made a slave and made to work. But not these Israelites. They're not taking any slaves. Everyone gets executed. The fear must have been incredible that spread throughout the land. And why does God give them such a harsh commandment? Why does God give them such a harsh commandment?
Because he doesn't want them to be tempted.
He doesn't want the Jews and the Gentiles married?
Yeah. He knows. He knows that if these Jews do not kill the beautiful women that are part left in the land, the idolatrous women, the Canaanites, if they do not kill them, what will those Jewish men do? They will marry them. That's what they'll do. They will marry those beautiful women. And if they marry those beautiful women, they will be very tempted to engage themselves in what?
Idolatry.
In idolatry. Now listen to me very closely. Every one of you, for the most part, there might be a few, but every one of you, for the most part, are going to marry somebody. Eventually. And if you marry a loser, okay, he will plague you or she will plague you for the rest of your life. You think, ladies, that you can marry an unbelieving loser and somehow make a difference in his life and convert him. You're not going to do it. If you men marry the most beautiful woman in the world, but she does not have a walk with the Lord, that will plague you for the rest of your life. Because I'm going to tell you right now, she's not going to remain beautiful for the rest of her life. What you want to know is, does she love the Lord? That is the most important thing. That's why such a harsh commandment. Because God knew that if they would engage in relationships with those idolaters that were left in the land, that they would be tempted to depart into idolatry, that their wives or their husbands would tempt them to go into idolatry. People, the chosen people that were designed by God to worship Him in the land that He promised Abraham, that all would be lost. And so a brutal commandment is given that every idolater is to be killed, so that only Israelites are left. And that every idol is to be destroyed and nothing is to be left that would tempt the Israelites. Nothing is to be left that would tempt the Israelites from falling into sin.